You're listening to SBS News.
Uncle Michael Welsh is a Wyoming man and member of the Stolen Generations. The 71-year-old shares his story of grief and healing, how he used alcohol and violence to suppress the trauma and abuse he says he confronted at Kinchella Boys Home, before finally finding safety and comfort to share his story among other men who were subject to the same trauma. In an extra episode for the Living Loss series, I speak to Uncle Michael about his journey with the Healing Foundation's Stolen Generations Reference Group and how he navigates grief.
The pain never goes away. We wake it up each time when we do these type of talks, but I understand above everything else that if we don't talk about it, it slowly kills us from the inside. As a child, they did this, and you can do any of this to children. So the thing that I love most of all about where we are now with you is that the purpose of this will help some child able to understand what's happened to them, because there's so many of our brothers and sisters who passed away and never ever been able to do what I'm doing now, to talk about it. I'm 71 years of age, so for 50 years I didn't talk about it and couldn't talk about it. And the truth is, I got teeth marks on my knuckles because I couldn't talk. And I still can't believe that that was me. But when I got old enough to turn to drink and alcohol, that type of thing, I did. Because I didn't know that I was traumatised. And I do know now the word trauma is not just a word. It's a disease that they programmed to put into my brain as a child. I was in two relationships, four children from both of them. My oldest son got taken away from me and the woman I married. He was found by accident by another sister who went up to Queensland to visit a sister, and he drove past in a car. He was 26 years of age when they asked him who he was. So they brought him back, and I met him for the first time in his life when he was 26.
I know you're a member of the Stolen Generations. If you're comfortable sort of sharing what that experience is like, especially in relation to that idea of grief that I'm exploring.
Look, Jack, before they took me away from my mother, there were seven of us they took from my mother. And my name's James Michael Willie Welcher, number 36. Now, each one of those and the number is identification of a part of a journey of me at where I was. I was Michael when I went into the homes. When we passed through the gates of L, that we call it, so we were given numbers. My brother and myself, he was number 17 and I was given number 36. And everything that we had and wore had those brands on it. And we couldn't, if we got caught using each other's names, we got punished or different way. Whatever that person felt like doing to punish us, that's what it did. So, and I was Michael again when I was back home. And I watched them put drums and stumps out to sit on. And I'd never realised, but they were making a ceremonial circle. And if they had got caught doing that, and this is 1964 or 65, something like that, they would have been jailed, shot or whatever, because the law stated that they wasn't allowed to use that culture. But then they sung out to me and they said, Michael, come in and come over. And then they sung out this, where my cousin was, and they said, with him, and waved like that for him to come over. This white man jumped up and come over. The word with him in our language means white man. Well, so when he came in, they said, come in outside the circle. They said, first of all, Michael, meet your father. I didn't know what to do because I wanted to, I wanted to shoot every white person that because of what happened to me where I was in the flock, the starvings and the sexual abuse. They tie you down and sexually abuse you. They did these things, and I went and told my story to the manager, and I got flogged and starved. And so that was the beginning of my shutting down at a young age. I think at about 9. We danced around the campfire of a night. This is what the beautiful life was like. Pop played the violin, Mum played the piano accordion. My auntie Selena, who had just said, told me about the name Witty, she played the bones. And we had uncle who played the gum leaves, a cousin who played the gum leaves. And we danced around the campfire of a night time while they talked about the stars and they talked about the sparks. They talk about the flames and the colours. The flames would change colours. So that was a world that was such a perfect world. And then school, we did school, and then they took us. It was difficult to ride on the train, and I can still see Mum and the uncle standing there and waving to us with the little handkerchief that they had. And Central Station became a very important part in our lives because that was where we were separated from there. That was the last place that we knew our family love, as you know. That was broken there, right on the split up there. That was something that happened, you know, 20 years later. We started to meet a couple of them as they come home and got rejected by our own community.
I can't imagine the grief that would have come alongside not being able to be welcomed back into your own community, but also having the trauma of the white community. Was that just compounding that grief and that trauma by not being able to be sort of back in your own community even?
I finished up in and out of the jail system like a yo-yo, you know, and fighting. I often show it. I got teeth marks all across my knuckles, you know, and I didn't look after myself at all in that sense. I got a bottle mark across the forehead. I got a bit hit across the snout with a 9-bar, you know. I've been stabbed twice. I've been shot at 3 times while I'm trying to get away from the bloke with the gun, you know. And rolled cars. I've been in 3 houses that have burned down. I'm here because they've given, I believe that I have a purpose of life to do this.
I guess talk me through what it was like holding that grief inside of you and how you navigated that, because it sounds like initially you didn't navigate it, obviously, in a way that you felt was healthy for you. Could you talk to me a little bit about why that trauma was felt in those ways initially?
We weren't allowed to talk. We had no choice to make a decision. And I know now at my life now that all of these things that they programmed us to do, they programmed us to be slaves for the colonised world, right, of assimilation. And we were never going to be anything else. They didn't want us to be anything else. We weren't going to be educated except for work. So that's what we were good at. And I did. I worked. I worked hard. I was a welder for 30-odd years. I'd get drunk, and I didn't drink because of the pleasure of it. I'd drink to wipe my mind out. And so I'd wake up in jail, you know, probably 7 times out of 10 I'd wake up in a cell. I'd teach my children how to fight when they were 5-year-old, 6-year-old. I'd get down and doing that. I didn't know I was reenacting what these people in that home's done to us. They taught us how to fight. They taught us how to knock people down and told us we were never allowed to ask questions or do anything. So that was coming out of me.
I'm really interested in how grief can change over time. And it sounds like initially, obviously, your grief was you repeating the anger and the way you were treated and abused in the boys' home. That was your way of responding to the grief by obviously emulating that behaviour. But then it sounds like something changed and you navigate your grief now by sharing your story with the other men who are from those homes, with other people that have no understanding of what it's like myself and others. What changed for you there? What happened Could you tell me about what happened? What prompted that change in response to your grief, I suppose?
I was welded for 30 years. And I got up and I chucked my elder down. I just walked away from it because my children, then they were starting to be treated like me. And my eldest son was taken away from us and that type of thing. Love is something that is so powerful that that's why I stayed in my own community. My concern is now is the next generation are the ones who are going to suffer. And I just identified that I've gone from 1 to 56. And that's not fair. That's not fair that the government. I talk about the government. Give me the right to be wrong. You've never given that to our people. Give me the resources to rebuild what you broke. They broke my family structure. I can only talk about my own, but they've done this to thousands of others because family structure takes care of children and takes care of family. Government, you've heard them say so many times that they want to heal communities. They can't heal communities. Not when, while there's 15 to 20,000 children in out-of-home care right now. While ever they take children away from families, families become broken, communities become broken. And it's not a community, it's communities. So it isn't possible to heal communities, but it is possible to rebuild family structure. Happy family makes happy communities. But, yeah, my journey to where I am here at this moment, it began because I couldn't watch my children be treated. They all say that they love me. They couldn't wish for a better father, but what did worry me was the way that my three children were being treated because of my violence and the way that I was acting out. Now, this is where now with this badge, this one, this is a place of safety. This is something that if we can then get our descendants, which is the most important thing about this journey that we're doing, we tell the stories and we talk about stuff now that's happened to us in the past. They are the knowledge elders of the future. So if we tell them about the pain of the past, that helps them to develop a better future from that knowledge. And that's stuff that's coming out of me that I don't know how. I do know that my mm-hmm. grandmother, my grandfather, and my mum, and they've given me this.
You talk about this idea of collective healing, and that's really interesting in terms of grief and that sort of process of healing and navigating grief. Could you tell me a little bit about what it's like when you're with the other men who share this experience, how that has helped you navigate this grief?
We say this, we are the ones who fall through the gap. You know, they talk about closing the gap. Well, that's fair enough, but we just touched on it just a minute ago. When you said that when we were home in our own communities, that the rejection from our own people plus the rejection from the community for the simple fact is that we didn't grow up there, so we didn't fit in. So we are a community of our own, right? And this is what we understand now as we come together. And I tell people that, please come and see us when we all come together. This COVID has knocked it over, but I said, what you will see the oldest children playing that you've ever seen in your life. Right? Because we go there, because we never had that childhood. So when we get together around each other, we all know which one, this, that one, and we all know a little bit about each other. Collective healing is that sense is that when we get together, we trust each other, and trust is probably the most powerful thing because of where we were. It's very difficult for us to trust anybody because of what happened to us. But so when we give our trust, it's so precious. But if it gets broken, well, then it doesn't go back. Because if we tell the truth, like I said, the young ones are the knowledge elders of the future. So we need to tell them about the trauma of what happened back then.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. I'm so grateful. You have given me so much time and been so vulnerable. I can't thank you enough.
I can't heal unless I can tell somebody. And I'm telling you now, those magical things about our people are the three most important things that we've got is the ability to listen, the ability to smell, and especially the ability of observation. And that's it, it's magic.
That was Uncle Michael Welsh, a member of the Healing Foundation's Stolen Generations Reference Group. Katrina Stirrett, SBS News.